Chapter 59. January 26th of year 19. The bunker was completely finished the day before yesterday. It's really a pity we are going to leave it again tomorrow, but we might return to it someday. I somehow cannot shake the feeling that some disappointment will await us at the source of the signal, yet I do not mention these concerns to Adam and Eve. They are literally living for that day and for the message. What would be the meaning of their lives if it turns out we came much too late? Yesterday we used our free time to take a look at the pit again, and there a sad surprise was waiting for us. The spider creature had retreated into the darkness of the ruin and died there. I examined it closely. Its legs are hollow, which is what makes it so light. The 6 joints on each leg could turn in any direction, a very impressive construction. I could not determine whether it has a sex or how it reproduces. There's nothing inside its body that is reminiscent of ova or sperm. Like many plants, perhaps it is able to reproduce by division, and the fact that there seem to be so few specimens would support this theory. If these creatures reproduce sexually, then they would have to travel long distances to do so. The most interesting part is the nervous system. The nerve pathways consist of silicon fibers running through the entire body. Therefore, I at first considered it a kind of cyborg, a manipulated creature with added machine technology. But after further inspection, I then found cells in the body capable of weaving these inorganic fibers, like spiders producing spider silk for their webs, and then placing them within biological materials. This might be the reason why the inhabitants of this planet started so early using semiconductor strands in their buildings. Nature practically pushed them toward this idea. The spider animals do not appear to have brains like organisms on Earth do. Yet inside their bodies, particularly in a layer on the outside about 4 centimeters thick, the silicon fibers are so close to each other that their capacity must allow for cognitive activities. I calculate the spider creatures should have the cognitive ability of mammals on Earth. Perhaps they even were, or are, related to the intelligent inhabitants of Proxima B who sent us the radio message. All 3 of us decided to leave the animal in its refuge and to close the entrances. That way, absolutely nothing would disturb its rest. Then we examined the rear of the pit and found a smaller structure built by the extraterrestrials, reminiscent of a guard shack. A tall human could have stood inside it, but would not have been able to sit down. By now we are waiting for the solar eruption. The entrance of our bunker is closed. But before closing it, I distributed cameras and sensors outside. Those recordings will be sent to my memory. I wondered if I should build a kind of monitor screen for Adam and Eve, but there will probably be nothing to see. Neither the hard X-ray or UV radiation, nor the particles that the planet's magnetic field is unable to keep out are visible to the human eye. If we didn't know what was about to happen, we might spend the day outside without suspecting anything. Then after a few hours, Adam and Eve might wonder where the intense sunburn on their skin came from, and a few days later, they would die from radiation sickness. Those of my circuits not hardened against radiation would also be destroyed, though the storage module containing my consciousness would be sufficiently shielded. We do not know the exact time of day when Proxima Centauri will erupt. Only the 40-day rhythm is confirmed. Therefore, we have to wait. Adam and Eve sit on the ground in the corner, playing a game they must have made up themselves. They are only allowed to use their hands in this game. We did not build any furniture, since we only have to stay here for a few hours and cannot carry it with us afterwards. The X-ray detector responds. "It is starting," I say. Adam and Eve are looking at me. It is a strange sensation because we cannot feel anything. Is our shielding working? We will see. Right now the dose rate is minimal, since we receive more radiation from the interior of the planet than from space. But outside, the radiation intensity is slowly increasing. Proxima Centauri must have erupted a short while ago, and the radiation reaches us at the speed of light, while the particles take significantly longer. And now something unexpected happens. It is getting bright outside. What happened? I turn the outside camera toward the leaf canopy. The sky is visible, and a few clouds are racing across it. I zoom in closer on the leaves. They have folded up, exposing only a small diameter to the radiation. Nature must have adapted to the event that has been repeating every 40 days for millions of years, just like the plants on Earth become used to the seasons. During my research, I had not noticed that the leaves have a joint in the middle. Then I remember a line leading from the point where they are attached to the tree all the way to the tip. I pan the camera a bit. In this bright light, the forest looks much more inviting than in the eternal twilight. "It is very bright out there," I explain. "The trees have folded their leaves." "Wow," Eve says. "I'd love to see that with my own eyes." "Don't you dare," I warn her, even though I know she's not serious. "But won't that take away some of our radiation protection?" she asks. "That's true. I included the leaf canopy in my calculations." "I've worked with a sizable safety margin, so don't worry," I say. But I am concerned. A quick estimate shows me the safety margin is gone. We have to hope the flare isn't much stronger than the previous one. While there is no reason it should be, I still feel queasy. During the following hours, I do not take my eyes off the instruments. The dose rate increases continuously, but down here in our bunker, it stays within a tolerable range. I wonder about possible emergency procedures. I could try to shield Adam and Eve with my body. But down here, direct radiation does not play such a big role. I would practically have to wrap myself around them. 3 hours later, the avalanche of electrons rolls towards Proxima B. I once more aim the camera at the sky, expecting a spectacular sight. The atmosphere does not disappoint me. Too bad, though. It does not get dark here. The aurora flickering across the sky is not nearly as impressive in normal brightness. Otherwise, the magnetic field is doing a great job. It diverts the charged particles around the planet. This creates a bit of Bremsstrahlung, breaking radiation, but that poses no problem for our shielding. The forest tells us that the eruption is over. 4.5 hours after it all started, the leaves unfold. The eternal twilight emerges from the shadows and becomes dominant again. "It is over," I say. "How about taking a little walk?" Adam and Eve eagerly get up. I remove the obstacles near the exit. Adam goes out first. "Awesome," he yells. I can imagine the reason why. "Marchenko, come here," Eve calls. "You've got to see this." I smile silently. I slowly climb the stairs and turn around. There is shimmering light in all directions. The variety of hues is overwhelming. It was worthwhile planting a large colony of mushrooms on our bunker. Now they're emitting the excess energy of the flare in all colors of the spectrum. It looks unique, like a coral reef on Earth, just without fish. I hope this image will be engraved in Adam and Eve's memory forever. Both stand there, mouths agape, breathing in the aromatic air, smelling of ozone, and marveling at the secret of a planet that is supposed to become their home at some point.